Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm joined now by Seb Stafford-Blore.
You sure are. Hello, Joe Devine.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic news. And also, JJ Bull.
Hello.
The big bulldog.
Yes.
How are you doing, okay?
Doing wonderful, yes. We watched all of the football.
Are you really doing wonderful? Because your beloved Scotland lost quite badly.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
We'll come on to talk about that. Let's give JJ a bit of a breather there for a start. But before we get started, let me remind you that if you're into football and you like reading about football, there's no better place for you than The Athletic. If you were to visit theathletic.com/TIFO, you'd find that you could enjoy a deal of £1 per month for 6 months to read all of the fantastic writers we have available. You know, there's a list of guest columnists during the Euros too, which is mightily impressive, Seb, including the one and only Scott McTominay writing a column for The Athletic. Pretty cool, huh?
Pretty cool. Emma Hayes is writing a column for The Athletic. Very good. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed reading that.
Yeah. And Alan Shearer is around, not just for the Euros, also around for other times.
He's more of a permanent, kind of has a permanent home, The Athletic, doesn't he?
But if you hate famous people, there's also, who else?
I mean, JJ and I occasionally write the odd piece, and sure, Alex is there too. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, a step above that and it's a little bit more famous. So maybe that, you know, maybe that's not what people are after.
TheAthletic.com/TIFO. That's £1 a month for 6 months. What a deal. Check it out. Okay. Well, without further ado, we were going to crack into the day four of the Euros. So I'll leave you in the cool hands and the warm embrace of JJ Bull and Seb Stafford-Blore. Okay, let's kick things off with Spain versus Sweden. 0-0. Always a good start. Attack versus defence. Sterile possession. JJ, we talked about this very briefly just after the game finished there. A little disappointing. How would you summarise the game?
Spain had all of the ball and didn't ping it around quickly enough. I think you saw the difference when Thiago Alcantara, let's call him Thiago, when he came on, you saw the difference how much quicker the game became. And he was hitting these drill passes from one wing to the other, which was just getting them forward more quickly. But the problem they had is Sweden are playing on a 4-4-2 block, and in theory a 4-3-3, which is what Spain were playing, you should have numerical advantage in midfield. Spain are just staying quite close together. And to be able to play through that or around that, because they drop deep very quickly, you need to have a quick tempo so you can get the ball around or through them. You want to try and switch it from side to side to create space between players so you can play through balls or vertical passes. And or you just want to be able to tap your way up the pitch. And it's kind of like, do you know when Spain just passed teams to death and that then moved on to what the kind of the German model was, where it's more counter-attacky. So a lot of teams would then deliberately try and pull a team like Sweden towards them to give themselves some space to get in behind. But then they weren't really able to do it at all. You played, I mean, they had Ferran Torres was playing. He's quick on the wing, couldn't really get in. Dani Olmo had quite a bit of the ball, but this didn't seem to really ever cause them real problems, did they?
Real people's problems. You're absolutely right. Anyway, speaking of real people's problems, the Spanish bench, Seb. Yeah. That's not really a great sequitur, isn't it? But it feels a little bit weak. I mean, we were talking about it midway through the first half. I suddenly thought, I'll have a look at who's on the bench because this Spain team feels a little light. You know, decent team, but, you know, lots of top players in there. Look at the bench. There really aren't too many options there. And I feel like, I don't know. I think I'm stuck thinking about Spain as a Spain of 2010. And anything just feels like a letdown a bit unfair from me, but...
No, but I think this is one of the problems. When you leave an indelible mark on the game, when you're great for a long period of time, this becomes the expectation. And so you lodge yourself in people's mind as a team that will always have amazing resources, always have plans B and C. But you're right, though. You look at the bench and let's be fair, Thiago came on, changed the game. JJ and I were talking about that. Within a few minutes, he put a little bit more pace into the passing, a bit more kind of almost authority. Just really knew what to do with the ball. It wasn't quite as tentative. Elsewhere, it was a little bit unproven. I'm looking through the names now. Adama Traore had a good Premier League season a couple of years ago, a little bit.
It was last season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not the one just
finished.
A
little bit indifferent this year. Gerard Moreno has had a great season in Spain. Didn't come on as the first forward change. Fabian Ruiz, like him a lot, but he's somewhere between being a great under-21s player and a really useful senior international. Yarzabal, don't know about him really. So I don't know. It's it felt a little bit like England were a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Beneath that top layer, it starts to get a little bit tenuous.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was really strange because it was Spain playing as kind of cliched late era Arsene Wenger Arsenal. Lots of possession, lots of different ways to miss chances, not a lot of conviction, much maligned forward missing chances there as well. Bit of an odd one.
Can I start thinking about it now? Because I'm going to talk to you about Alvaro Morata.
Thinking,
Spain have always kind of had a striker problem, haven't they? I mean, apart from the Diego years, I know there was Torres, but Torres was never brilliant for Spain.
David
right?
Villa was brilliant for Spain.
Okay, that is true.
Well, I suppose he could play as an inside forward, often play as a wide forward for Barcelona too.
He wasn't
could
like
play
a super nine.
No, he was probably too rounded a player to be classed as a nine, but he was brilliant, let's be fair. Also, Raul, going back.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah, going back. What I said was always. What I actually meant was just recently.
Just recently in the last couple of years. No,
fair enough. The last sort of 10 years.
It feels as if the centre forward, it feels as if Spanish football isn't really geared to produce like an old-fashioned number nine. I mean, I know Diego Costa played for Spain, but Diego Costa was naturalised. He was, born in Brazil. Isn't what you would associate with kind of typical production in Spain. So it's weird. It feels a little bit like this moment's been coming and you kind of, if this team's going to win the tournament, it's going to be goals by committee. Alvaro Morata's not going to score 10 times in this competition. I don't think anybody else is either. You're going to have a pretty mighty contribution from midfield, from wide positions.
I mean, he's rubbish, isn't he?
It's not...
Let me tee this up properly because what's happened is you've started the segment before I've done my bit, and if you do that, I've got nothing to say.
It does
And I look like a fool.
Okay, sorry about that.
Let me watch this.
Okay.
Alvaro Morata.
Yeah. Interesting.
Never scored more than 15 league goals in a season. Did you know that? No, you didn't. I wrote it in the plan. Averages almost 1 in 2 for Spain, though, in about 40 caps. But here's the big stat that I found out earlier today, specifically me. £161 million has been spent on him by clubs across his career. I believe that includes loan fees, too. That's too much money for Alvaro Morata. That's my hot take.
It feels like it's too much money for Alvaro Morata. It also feels as if he's been someone that people have assumed is good for a really long time without possibly looking at some of the situations he's got himself into. Didn't succeed at Chelsea. Atletico Madrid are kind of paying him to go away at the moment, which is a strange situation. It's not that I think he's bad. I just don't quite know what he's good at. Like when he was a young player, people said things like he has loads of shots a game. And so from a data perspective, that's really encouraging. And that was very fair. As time's gone on, still having shots, but they're not going in the goal.
He seems like he's sort of becoming a ghost across the course of his career. Do you know what I mean? Like making less and less impact, at least to my perspective. What do you think about him, JJ?
Quite spooky, so I can see why you'd say that. He is as expensive, like weirdly expensive. He is as weirdly expensive as he is. In the same way that an oven is so much cheaper than I think it should be.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Sure.
Like how come so much has been spent on Morata when an oven is like
Toaster. Toaster doesn't really expensive.
I don't like, there's so much cheaper. How much do you think an oven is?
Like £400.
It's a bit you get cheaper ones than that though. But how could that be? It's a big contraption.
It's a dangerous big contraption.
It could kill a man. Yeah. And you can eat several things in it.
Are these all things that are both an oven and Elvira Murata?
Yes. Yes. And I don't know another way I can link an oven to Murata, but he's certainly not cooking right now in his form. So, yeah. I think Murata, what he is good at is movement off the ball. He makes very clever runs, but then he doesn't quite have... He also falls over too much, so I don't like that.
Is he good with the ball? Is he good, like, if I'm an attacking midfielder and I ping a ball into his feet, does he do that well?
This is the thing. I think he's a good footballer, right? Because he's got good technique, good first touch, and so you look at him and go, like, he's a high-level footballer. He's got, like, 90 attribute points to use.
He's kind of more than Roberto Soldado-ish type figure. Really good with the ball at his feet.
Yeah.
That's harsh, call him Soldado.
No, but forget the kind of negative, the bad Roberto side of that. Think about the kind of... You know, what he does in the kind of the usefulness, the sort of the parts of his game which make you think when he's not scoring goals, yeah, but maybe he's just a number 10. Like when I went through that phase with Soldado.
I think he's not really, like, to clarify, Alvaro Morata, obviously extremely high level player, should go without saying, but he's sort of not anything. And I think that's part of the problem, right? Because when you go through these dry patches, you think of a player like Soldado, right?
Yeah.
He's big.
He's not.
Yeah, he was fairly big.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
No, he wasn't. He's about my height.
No.
He's about 5'10".
No.
That's how I thought. How Jovens cost.
I thought he was... I'm thinking of Fernando Llorente.
Yes.
Yeah, he is big. Yeah.
Never mind. Let's move on.
Yeah, but this is a good point, though, because Murata, quite a tall guy, but not very physical. Mm-hmm. He's more of a finesse player. So it's a little bit of a trick of the mind.
But he's not a super finesse player.
No, he's not a super... So he's kind of betwixt and between. Not really jack. Anything. Yeah, right.
Also,
Jack of all trades.
Okay. I want 9 to be able to like hit lace his shots, like put power through it. He's definitely always holding then L2 to curl it.
Yeah.
Always, I would say.
Mm.
I also want him to play a bit of, you know, don't like it football. Like, you know, sort of Brill and Bolo type.
Like get at them, let them know you're there.
Head down, steam up the pitch kind of football. But can't do that either.
Well, he appears to be Spain's first choice, so I'm sure we'll see more
of
him.
That's weird to me. That's weird. I think Moreno.
You would play Moreno?
Moreno's a better player. Moreno is also, more importantly, he's come off the better season. No one scored. Only Messi scored more goals than Moreno in La Liga last season. That's important. You take form into a tournament, especially when it's a centre forward.
Why didn't he even come on in the game then?
He did, but he wasn't. Sarabia came on first,
right?
And then they introduced. I think they took Dani Olmo off for Moreno, and it felt like he never really got a chance to get into the game. But I think he's a better player. I just don't get it. Not quite as fashionable, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Well, before we talk about Isak, who I know you enjoyed watching in this game, I wanted to talk quickly about Pau Torres. Because, firstly, Spain's defence is a little bit timid still. I suppose it's a new partnership, so they're learning each other, and we'll see them develop over the next couple of games. But with Pau Torres, a specific relation to Manchester United, because there are rumours at the moment of a transfer afoot, potentially, in the rumour mill. And it seems like quite a nice fit, really, doesn't it? Because I know that, United... seem to have been looking for a left-footed centre-back for some time so that Harry Maguire can play his natural right-footed, right-sided position.
Yeah.
I think the only reason he plays on the left is because all the other ones are too bad to do it. So that would be quite a nice fit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I always like that. I like the kind of the symmetry when you have a right foot and a left foot. Also, like it's kind of the curse of the better centre-half to move into the uncomfortable position because you think, right, you've got the attributes to deal with it, so you're going to make the sacrifice. Whereas... with a player like that, you kind of, if you move Maguire over to the left, you're sort of taking away, you're cutting off one of his passing angles because he's decent with the ball at his feet. You're also putting him in a position where he's having to tackle with his weaker foot. Don't like that. He'll get away with it because he's a good player, but that's not the same as being in your right position and being as effective as you could be. Also for United, we were talking about this over our order in food earlier. You have the possibility of going to a back three. Without moving Luke Shaw into one of those centre back positions and losing him from the kind of the wing back role, so I like it. I think it would cost a lot of money, though, huge amount of money for Torres. Unless there's a buyout clause. Well, Spanish buyout clause is always massive, so I doubt there's a deal to be done there. But I'd like it.
Can I ask you a tactical question about Please. That? I think Seb kind of explained it. But when people talk about having a left-footed player in the left centre back role for the passing options, are they saying because their body is kind of facing to the left slightly if they're on the left side, and they're more likely to be able to play a pass out up and wide. I'd never really understood exactly why having a left foot on the left is better if you're a centre back. I get it as a fullback.
Yeah.
Why is it?
Well, I mean, it depends entirely on the situation they're in and the team they're playing against, but generally the ball goes out from goalie to you on, say, the left side of centre back and you're left footed. Ball goes out to you inside the 18-yard box now. Then you turn your left foot. Your natural next pass is going to be wide to, and you can do it on the right foot, but the angle's better. So you can put it ahead of them easier. It's just better angles for passing it that way. Also, you can do those kind of, if you want to play longer balls into the channel, it's going to be easier because it's going to curl out to in. So it's not going to go straight out of play if it keeps going. You know, that kind of curled kind of bit there. But then you could also, you could argue if you played them the opposite way around. So say you're playing against a team who has inside forwards, like Liverpool, for example. So if Mane's coming off the left, he's right-footed. So if you had Laporte played on the right for Spain this evening, he's left-footed. So if you come on into your right, stronger foot suddenly is your left. So then you could argue that then they could better deal with that threat.
Yeah.
Which is why sometimes you'll get a manager like Pep Guardiola or something like that will often play, you know, a wrong-footed player on the opposite fullback side. So right footer on the left back, so they can deal with someone running in to deal with that. But it is to do with where you pass and what the angles you get. It's just easier having a mixture of the two. But yeah.
I like it. Speaking of angles, a man who doesn't need angles is Isak, because he just goes wherever he wants, apparently. Seb.
Flows like water into the gaps. Yeah, well, he created the best chance of the game, which Marcus Berg should have taken.
Yeah.
A horrible hack over the bar at the back post. Isak is... He's interesting. He scored 1 and 2 last season at Sociedad. I've always thought that, I don't know if this makes sense, he's always seemed like he plays a bit shorter than he really is. Like he's 6'4", which surprises you when you look it up, but he seems like a smaller, more compact player. And that might be because, well, two reasons. Maybe because his touch is so good, his technique is really, really good, but also because he doesn't seem to exert that kind of that physicality on the defenders around him. I thought it was interesting tonight because he seemed to get that blend of physicality, that size and technique absolutely right. And I think this might have changed because I looked this up just before he went off, but I think he had fewer than 30 touches in the entire game. And yet he had a pretty pronounced impact with Sweden not really doing a thing in the Spanish half. And I think that's really encouraging. And I, forgive me, I didn't see the name of the person who left the comment, but someone said if Spain had him up front tonight, they'd have won.
Yeah,
I'd say so. That would have been something to see. But he's interesting because he's one of those guys who, when he broke into senior football at Dortmund, everyone lost their mind. He was kind of, this guy is going to be, you know, 95 rated player within 5 years. And I think he left Dortmund without actually, I think he may have scored a couple of goals in the Pokal, the German version of the FA Cup, but don't think he ever scored a Bundesliga goal. Went on loan to Willem Twee, I think, in the Eredivisie. Scored goals, then was sold to Sociedad. I think Dortmund still have a buyback there somewhere. But he's been really successful in Spanish football. And it's and you can see the development in him. You can see the kind of the sort of the more rounded game and the just a mighty talent. And still really young. And you forget that because he has been around for so long.
That point on him being, so apparently he's 6'3".
6'3", okay.
Apparently is what the football manager reckons. And playing like a smaller player is interesting because a lot of coaches do that if they've got a tall striker, is they try and coach them to think like they're closer. Like
with what aim? Just with a kind of...
Well, so make sure that you're making runs in the box, not relying on just being a target.
Oh,
so
I see.
So it's to do with... there was a boy at Aberdeen called Sam Cosgrove, and I know this is actually what Aberdeen did when they coached him. I spoke to the manager, Derek McInnes, and they were saying the way they were coaching him is to make him think that he's much smaller than he actually is. So if he thinks he's 5'10" in his head... then he's going to be trying to make runs to get ahead of people because that's what you have to do. You can't just rely on your height to beat them. Okay. And normally be at a standing start if you're that kind of tall. So you coach them to make the runs and to always looking for the space. Suddenly you have that height advantage already. So you're just a much better player.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating.
I wonder how easy that is because presumably as a taller player, if you've always been tall and you've come through youth football, size will get you quite far in youth football because you're able to, not just because you can just push people over, just because... You see, even as far up as maybe the under 21s, you see the advantages that kind of physical gifts can give. So it must be really hard to kind of relearn the game in a way.
It depends how tall he was when he was younger as well, because you don't know how tall he was. I mean, just probably found that out. That'd be useful to know. Like a lot of players, people think are going to be amazing when they're younger just because they're tall and strong.
And then those physical advantages kind of fade away. They just melt with,
But there's loads of things they put into training now or in youth level football to make sure that those things are leveled out, like the year that someone's born can affect, because that's the class they go into. So if you're born the later half of the year or the earlier half of the year, I can't remember which is the advantage, but one means you're going to be less physically developed as others, but also every human develops different stages and ways. So that can be one of the things. But in terms of Isaac, in terms of coaching it, you would just, when you have your individual attacking sessions, it would just be the coaches who are telling them you need to make this kind of run, or, and you just get them to repeat it and get that. It's,
what kind of drill would that be in though?
I mean, there'd be so many thousands of different ways you could do it, but say you're having a, say you're putting the ball out wide to a guy crossing it in. So you'll have two coaches, one will put it out wide to the cross, and maybe you've got a winger you're training, and then that would, you just try and have dummies set up. So you're saying, right, you're going to aim to go outside of the near post and you're going to cut to the far.
Oh, do you mean those big, really creepy inflatable white things that you see? That kind
those are like the sort of see-through men made of wire that look like they could be in a children's playground. Do you know what?
Can you imagine if you were like cutting across a training ground late at night and someone had left a couple of those out there? You didn't really know where you were and just stumbled across a few of them.
I'd rather that than an actual person.
Yeah, but initially you'd be like, that's, you know.
Well, if it'd come to life, that would be really...
It'd be very, very frightening.
Spooky Moretto.
No, you wouldn't want
dark.
That.
Dark. No. Terrifying.
Are you done? Want to pivot us away from this?
Just waiting for you to finish.
Okay.
Jamie Powell in the chat says, big shout out to Lindelof. It was quality today. Definitely improved this season.
Yeah, he has. I mean,
that's all right. Don't. That's not that interesting. Well, I'll stop you there.
No. I'm going to plow on because I wanted to just say well done to Marcus Danielson, who I'd never heard of before, but everything that came to the penalty box just seemed to hit him somewhere on the body, just kept getting hit by the football, and he played very well.
Yeah,
never heard of him. Plays in China apparently.
Good job to Michael.
Marcus.
Good job, Marcus.
32-year-old Marcus.
32 years old.
Didn't get capped until after his 30th birthday, which is quite
rare.
No way. Quite rare today in
that
football.
That is good.
Especially if you play in the Chinese Super League, I'd have thought.
Yeah.
That seems, you know, a circuitous route to a
proud moment one might have considered would never come.
Very, very well done tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I referenced the chat, which is, as I note, called me portly this evening. Thank you, chat. because if you're listening on the podcast, on your mobile device or laptop computer, you should know that we also live stream these podcasts on YouTube. The evening of the games we're discussing, shortly after the final game has finished, about 10 minutes afterwards. So you can join us on YouTube on Tifo IRL, where we are also posting some wonderful videos during the tournament, making use of our large touchscreen tactics board to explain all of the complicated details of the football world. So there you go. Come and join us on Tifo IRL and give us a subscribe. Thank you for that. We will be back momentarily.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Okay, we're back. Scotland, 0. 2 Czech Republic, or the XG says Scotland 2.23, 0.95 Czech Republic. Very different to the scoreline there, of course. But the main thing here is goal of the tournament. Already here, Patrick Schick from 49.7 yards away. A shot with just 0.03 XG. That's extraordinarily low. It's the longest in the European Championship since 1980, although Seb hasn't included who scored the longer one. Thank you, Seb. And it was described by Alan Shearer for The Athletic in his column as unbelievable, full stop, gorgeous. And that's true. Do you know where I think it would have been wonderful to watch that goal? At the old Red Lion.
That would have been great.
It would have been great. Yeah. Listen, this isn't an advert. This Uncle Damien's pub, the old Red Lion, best place to watch football in London. And of course, they are allowing Seb to stay there for free throughout the whole tournament. Just because they're nice and they're my family and there's a familial obligation, and also, you know, Seb otherwise would have been out on the street, and we wouldn't have wanted that because somebody might have stolen his work property. So we've put him in a little bedroom upstairs at the Old Red Lion. It really is the best place to watch football.
Great
in London.
Football.
Lovely spot.
Yeah.
Hang out with Will, the barman. Make friends with Rolo, the pub dog. But don't feed him because otherwise he will have gastro issues.
What is this podcast?
Anyway, that's the bit about the Old Red Lion. Goal of the tournament, Patrick Schick. We did that bit. Lovely goal though, Seb. Goodness me. It wasn't just a long hoof, were it?
No, because I have a thing about goals from distance. Like, there's, beyond a certain distance, people just assume a goal is great, whatever happens. So you get that kind of very famous Matt Taylor goal where the ball sort of just lands on his foot, he thumps it and it goes in. Or Charlie Adams scored one at Stamford Bridge a couple of years ago. And it's kind of just a reward for being able to kick the ball a long way.
Yeah.
Whereas this was great vision. Patrick Schick knew exactly where the goalkeeper was. Actually said in his interview off the game, he'd noticed the high goalkeeping line in the first half, which is kind of cool. But if you find the angle from behind the goal, you see the kind of the shape on the shot and the kind of the ease with which he just strokes in from what, like 50 yards or something. So elegant.
Also,
so fun.
First game at the Euros. It's a big moment to try that in as well. It's not just that, like, it's wonderful technique and it's, you know, take somebody extremely accomplished and observant to do that. It's also the boldness to even try that in the first, like, one of the issues with the Euro so far, and I think many major tournaments in the first sort of game week or match day, is that teams are very cautious because they don't want to lose their first game, right? So we have had a bit of sterile football. And I love that somebody took a shot from the halfway line.
So think about that situation. So you're Patrick Schick and you're breaking with the ball. You've got one goal lead, remember? And Scotland, you know, applied a lot of pressure. Scotland, I thought, were the better team. JJ is probably going to disagree later. But you'd think, right, consolidate, drive the ball into the opposition half and slowly build a phase. Because you don't want to give the ball away, do you? You want to kind of, you want to wrestle the momentum of the game. You want to stymie whatever the opposition are doing. And just control the game a little bit. Instead, you do that. And if you get that wrong, you get hammered from the technical area, surely. Like, you just, if you just, you know, spoon that into the stand, then that's going to be kind of, that's going to be the first thing the coach tells, says to you when you come off. But just lovely finish. And just, I love the ease with which he does it. Doesn't break stride. It's just a gentle kind of carving shot that just doesn't even bounce before it goes in.
I think it's like football law that he had to hit that. You know, in the same way when the ball drops on the edge of the box from like a corner or something.
Have to hit it.
Yeah, you have to hit it. Yeah. You have to do it.
Do you remember the last season there was a Chelsea debutant who, I forget who it was, but he came on and it was his, he was an academy product, came on and the ball dropped to him on the volley about 40 yards out. And you just saw it, you saw it in his mind going, gotta hit it, I've gotta hit it. And he actually, it just, you know, I think it went like sideways.
I'm all for it.
But you have to do it because if that's your first touch in professional football, then, you know, you have to do it.
Hit the table again, Seb.
I shall not, no.
Two times in the space of 3 minutes.
The thing is, you
shall be punished.
I accidentally
Patrick Schick is also a fantastic name, isn't it? One of the great names in world football.
A great name, yes.
I love people called Patrick, but Schick, yes, please. Anyway, let's talk about that goal from the other perspective though, JJ, because some people on social media were disappointed by David Marshall's positioning.
Yes.
You called a friend of yours who's a goalkeeping coach, and what did he tell you?
My friend, who is a professional goalkeeping coach, said he was slightly too high. This is what happens. You do your badges. You spend your career playing coaching goalkeepers, and this is.
I've got a follow-up question though. Yeah. So, if he's that high, because like if Manuel Neuer is there, I'm okay with it because when he gets the ball, or if he's sweeping behind his defense, he's useful because he's composed on the ball, or Edison or Ter Stegen. David Marshall. I mean, like, what's the real value of him being there? Because the chance of him making a mistake or hacking a clearance or...
Yeah, I don't...
Feels weird.
I mean, on one hand, you sort of go like, oh, he's not going to score from there.
So, ooh, like, do your worst.
Let him have a go. Yeah, he's not going to score from there. The separate parts to it are that Jack Hendry probably shouldn't have tried a shot when he is... there were two defenders behind him, but he's still essentially the last man for his third of the pitch. So he should not have shot. Also, because he's not going to score. There's another reason he shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
He hit one against the Netherlands and scored. So he's, you know, he's allowed to have a goal, which is not then. Yeah, they could have played it wide. I think Stephen O'Donnell was waiting for the pass out wide in the overlap. Just a bad decision at the start, and he hits it badly, but blah, blah, blah. Ball jumps, and then Marshall straight away, starting position. He is about 10. It's about 10, 15 yards. It's too high.
I mean, he's closer to the centre circle than he is to his goal.
Yeah, but then maybe he's just got caught watching the... watching the
yeah.
play.
He's watching the game. He's getting ready to celebrate the goal. Yeah,
and that's the thing. And you just don't expect it. And maybe he was a little bit quicker. Maybe he was a bit younger or something like that. He might have been able to save it. It's one of the things I thought going to this tournament. David Marshall is now a national hero in Scotland because he saved the penalties that got Scotland through to the Euros first place, first tournament in 23 years. And now we're out. But he, if he wasn't there, what you'd want is Alan McGregor of Rangers, who I still think is one of the best goalkeepers genuinely in the entire UK.
Like, yeah, I agree.
He's not only is he mental, but he's such an insane, desperate man to win. But he's just a brilliant goalkeeper. Some of the stuff he's doing this season, Europa League level, Scottish Premiership, just unbelievably good.
Was he in goal for Rangers when they got to the Europa League final?
I don't remember.
Was that Alan McGregor? That would have been in...
Spent a long time in Premier League as well, I mean, so he could have been...
It'd have been, because he was at Hull, wasn't he, for a bit, but this would have been probably 2007, 2008. I can't remember exactly when, but they got beaten by Zenit. I think Alan McGregor had a brilliant tournament, I think.
Yeah.
I think. Apologies if I'm wrong about that.
Well, I can't remember exactly. We can try and find out, but if he'd... did he play in that? No, it doesn't say he got a runner-up thing for it. If he'd still been playing for Scotland in this tournament, it would have been such a strong... kind of, one of the weaknesses, I think, is at the back for Scotland. There's no strong, definite first-choice centre-back. I thought Grant Hanley was really good.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
Best I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
But
didn't realise he was that quick. I've never associated Grant Hanley with pace.
His body position, I thought, was really interesting. Yeah, the way he was like shielding stuff out, just very in control of the situation. And we lost 2-0. So was he? I don't know.
What's the difference between... Because when you came into the office, JJ was so excited this morning. He came with his iron brew and he had his kind of tartan face mask. And we were talking about the Chiarentini injury. What's the difference? What would have been the effect of him playing?
Tierney playing?
Yeah.
What's the difference in Scotland when he's in that position? I think Tierney wouldn't have stood for how passive a lot of the play was. So the plan, I didn't... So there's a few things, right? Tierney wasn't playing not through manager choice because I think he might be injured.
It's a bit vague, but he had a bit of a knock. People think he's going to play against England. So it can't be serious if it's going to be fit in 3 or 4 days.
Well, regardless, when Tierney plays, I thought we'd get more out of Robertson because it tends to be that Robertson often just has to drop in because Tierney's like, sack this, I'm going. And he drives up and often underlaps. Or he'll overlap Robertson when he goes inside. So there's a couple of things that happens. And you have to treat the Czech Republic game as the most likely one that Scotland would win. This was the one Scotland should have won.
Yeah.
This is the game. So you think you play your most attacking setup. I think not playing... I like Stephen O'Donnell a lot, mostly as a person, because he's really nice. But as a footballer, I think he said... like he jokes about himself being a technically limited player. And you saw it again and again and again and again in this game... he didn't have the speed, acceleration, or dribbling ability to take anyone on 1v1. And because he is all of the width as a single wing back in that system, he's just trapped on the right side. And Scotland kept going up the right. And you've got Robertson on the left trying to make these runs. I don't know if they're trying to drag play to the right to switch to Robertson. And there's that chance that Robertson missed, you know, he came on to the ball as it was played across very well across the pitch.
Yes.
And that might be an example of it, right? But I think you should be focusing on the left side. Tierney... should have been the left centre-back. He would have pushed further forward than Cooper did at any point and helped out in either midfield, give you a bit of a, not an overload, but you could match when you need to do that. He's also just hardy and gives you that grit that was definitely missing in the performance. But in terms of like Clark, what I think he got wrong with this, if you care, is that like playing Lyndon Dykes up top as a striker, fine, but don't play every single pass out from the back to him. Because you're just giving the ball away every single time, trying to get runs in behind. Czech Republic realised it within the first 2 minutes, the first 5 minutes Scotland were okay. But after 15, once the Hampden Roar had quietened down, then Czech Republic just grew into it and had control of it. And they were chipping long to Dykes, trying to get a knock-on header. It's not going to work. And they had McGinn and Armstrong in the team. And McGinn's best games for Scotland have been playing as the 10. So it's a 3-4-1-2.
Really, that far forward?
Yeah.
Right.
But he'll drop back to help out, isn't he? But then you've got Callum McGregor and Scott McTominay. McTominay is not a six.
Right.
So they're playing him as a central midfielder in a three. He's not that player. Like he's not, he's box to box or he wants to get up the pitch. He's not going to sit in behind that midfield. And that, I think that was a mistake. I think even though you're playing Czech Republic and it should be the weaker team you're playing against, I mean, they're largely equal, right? I would have said. But you want, Callum McGregor is going to be the player who receives the ball and helps give you that diamond shape at the back so you can then build from there so you don't always have to go long to Dykes. If you have a player like Dykes or Adams that can take that ball down or knock it on, there's got to be one option of several. You can't be every single time. And so you play McGinn off of that and then you can play Christie, and I thought he was okay in the first half. People I've read have said he wasn't. I thought he was fine. Just need to have two players running off of them. They weren't ever really able to do it. Armstrong's a great player. Didn't work for him today. McTominay's not a six. I think he got the team selection wrong. I think he should have taken James Forrest on for O'Donnell earlier, maybe even put Nathan Patterson on. Forrest was great. As soon as he came on, the tempo changed a little bit and he was able to get a lot more done the right wing because able to take the game to them slightly. Just a few errors. And the big thing, like Steve Clarke said after the game, oh, well, we've got some learnings from it. We're not there to get learnings. We're here to try and do well. Well... It's a bit gutting, but weirdly, like, say I was excited to come in this morning. I was really excited yesterday, and this morning I woke up and I sort of knew this was going to happen.
But this is interesting though, because I mean, one of the points in our plan here is to say that JJ felt a little bit negative about the game for understandable reasons, perhaps as a fan, but also for the performance perspective. You thought Scotland were quite good, and this was a point of difference in our conversation today, Seb.
It was. It's made me doubt myself, though, because I don't know whether that's because I expected Scotland to be much worse, just because I don't know very much about Scotland. I know the English-based players, don't follow Scottish football, I don't pretend to. But I thought that actually the difference between the two teams is pretty negligible. Mm. I thought, like, in particular, in the second half, Scotland produced quite a lot of, at least crossing opportunities down the left-hand side. I thought they opened the Czech Republic up a little bit. I felt that they asked more questions of the centre-back and goalkeeper than they did at the other end. And I was impressed by McGinn.
I was impressed by McGinn.
Yeah, because I don't associate him with some of the things that he does for Scotland. At Villa, he's a much more conservative player. You see flashes and people remember some of the goals he scored, that very famous volley that everybody saw for a couple of days. It was ubiquitous. But you see a little bit more flamboyance. I don't know whether that's about... If you're,
he's got that in his locker though, hasn't he?
Like he does, but you don't see it.
To be
honest,
I don't watch Villa very often. So when I have watched Villa and he stands out, it's because he's done something good. Presumably, this is why I'm remembering that. Before Ross Barkley arrived, and there was a bit more an opportunity to play alongside Grealish, you did see that from begin.
You did. I just think it's about if you come out of the Villa side and John McGinn has a different hierarchical role for Scotland, I would presume he does anyway, than he does for Villa. So you have a little bit more license to be expressive, encourages some flair out of you. I don't know, that's theory.
Is that the same for you at your other podcast or?
No, I'm afraid so, yeah. It's interesting. I thought Scotland were, I was expecting something quite blunt. I felt when Shea Adams came on, the way that the phases were put together at the top of the pitch were better. I think Shea Adams has a little bit more variety in his game. I like the way he spread the play. I like the way he would receive the ball in central positions and then shuffle it out to either the wide right or the wide left. I thought that worked. And
he's just a good footballer, Adams. That's the thing.
Exactly. And also, ultimately, Czech goalkeeper played really, really well. I know there are a couple of instances where you could say that chance should have left him with no chance, possibly. That should have been, I think it was, who missed the chance when he saved with his legs? Who was that? I forget.
Oh, it was Lyndon Dykes. I think the back was his left foot.
Yeah. That has to go in, but it's still a good save. I was impressed. I think that, I know the temptation is to think that Scotland are out, but you can qualify as a best place runner up. We weren't impressed with Croatia. Let's not get carried away. When England play Scotland, you don't factor in things like individual talent too much because that's not what that kind of game is about ever.
On that note, Niall D in the chat says, all part of Scotland's plan to lull England into a false sense of security. JJ, England game coming up on Friday. You won't be here for that. You're going to the pub to watch that, yes. I believe, at the Old Red Lion. What kind of changes will you be expecting? I mean, it sounds from what you're saying and from what I saw today, Steve Clarke maybe a little bit conservative. Would you like to see more from Scotland in attacking optimism?
No, I think... Well, there's the thing. I think you have to be more... if you're going to play this 5-3-2, I don't like... It's a weird thing to not like a particular system. It doesn't make any sense why you wouldn't like one.
You were talking about this during the game.
I don't like 5-3-2 because I think everything either has to go very quickly from the back to the striker and there's, you know, you're going to hold up the ball. Seems very 90s to me. And then everything else has to go through the wing backs and they're often just 1v1. They're kind of stuck there. I get 3-4-3 a little more because then you can very easily create little triangles in different parts of the pitch and that really helps get the ball forward.
Mm.
Scotland can like pass through, like you say, they don't follow Scottish football very much there, but then there's only three players in that team who play in Scotland.
Yeah.
So that it's, everyone's Premier League or...
I suppose it's the conversation, JJ, more than anything else. I don't know back in Scotland, what the kind of the issues are, the contentious points. I don't get what the kind of...
What is the man in the street talking about?
Well, yeah, like which positions are people concerned by? It doesn't like, I know a little bit more because we work with JJ, but... You know, generally speaking, not very much.
You mean, yeah. And I mean, but I think the thing that worries me is up front, like you wonder whether you play, a lot of people want to play Adams and Dykes together, but I don't like that because you have two quite, Adams is more mobile than Dykes, I would say, but they're still two big lads up top, really. And it's just not, it's like, if you're going to do that, I think you've got to play probably 4-4-2 because then at least you've got an extra forward player rather than have you, just play defensive or play more expansive, just don't have this thing that doesn't really know what it is. You saw how they defend with the back five, then a really narrow shape. So all that they're probably had to do is switch over quickly to their side and they can come up that side. I think the team selection, it's a shame that it turned out as it did. Like, I think the ball bounced mostly in favour of Czech Republic and that happens in some games. Yeah. It's like the computer's against you. It's just that's
as the XG says.
Exactly, yeah. So in theory...
The reverse result should have been...
Yeah, and Scotland were quite lucky in some of the games qualifying to get there in the first place. So we can't moan too much.
Sure.
In terms of England, which was, I think, the question originally, I do believe I would play it as a 3-4-3 because then it's a 5-4-1 and really just block the spaces, sit deep, don't let them make those cutbacks. Reference that in the video we did before on TVIRL, the Scotland preview thing. There's a big space that's between the five and the midfield two. And that's something to look out for. And I would stay with Christie again and I'd play... probably McGinn just behind them or be able to make runs on the outside of one of the central forwards. I would play Adams because I think he's a better footballer than Dykes. That sounds quite harsh on Dykes, isn't it? But just, Adams is just better, I think. And I just want them to win. It would be great. And I thoroughly...
I mean, I guess that's the thing, isn't it? You have to go into that game looking for a win. There's no opportunity to be happy with a draw anymore.
Well, what I expect is that having lost to Czech Republic, we're now going to either beat England or Croatia, but draw the other one and not qualify. It'll be the closest possible thing.
If you get 4 points, I think you'll qualify.
Right, if we beat England, we'll lose Croatia. If we draw with England, we'll draw with Croatia. It'll be just close enough to be annoying.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, we'll be back momentarily. Okay, we're back. Poland 1-2 Slovakia. A red card. Krahowiak is our first dismissal of the tournament. How exciting. But what we want to talk about now, albeit extremely briefly, because we've overrun again like real fools, Lewandowski, undoubtedly one of the greatest strikers in history, Seb, I would say. But you wouldn't have known that from this game, would you?
No, not good.
Mostly because he didn't touch the ball.
No, I was super disappointed because I think he only had 4 touches in the box. Had 5 shots, but very little space. They were mainly blocked or half chances. And it's a shame. Like, obviously, the situation with Poland is that Paulo Sousa was only appointed in January. Very strange coaching decision to dismiss a manager who'd qualified them for a major tournament, but
People keep saying he's only had 3 training sessions with them?
No, 3 weeks of preparation, not 3 training sessions.
Okay.
And to me, I don't know how much of this was influenced by the red card, but to me, Poland looked like a team that weren't cohesive enough to make the best use of their attacking parts. Didn't see very much of Zielinski, who's a super player for Napoli. I know that the Polish public are a little bit irritated by the kind of disparity between his club and country form. But it was very shuffle out to the wide positions cross. I think they had 35 crosses, which is kind of what you'd expect. That's kind of like David Moyes Man United. situation where you think, okay, well, that's our route to goal because we don't quite have the confidence in our little in our combinations to pick through Slovakia. But then by doing that, you're playing towards Slovakian strength. Martin Skriniar is their best player, or is, as a result of Marek Hanžek getting a little bit older.
Yeah.
And he was immense. I mean, he obviously he scored the winning goal, but I think he, I don't have a tally on the amount of clearances or tackles he made, didn't commit a foul all game, didn't put the ball in harm's way, was great with his distribution, scored a goal. And you just think that's the game plan that Slovakia would have wanted to face.
Yeah.
Like if you're coming up against Lewandowski, what you hope for is, right, well, to make it a fair contest, just hoof the ball into the box and let our massive, massive £50 million centre-half deal with it. Be like, okay.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened.
Tell you what, talking about that David Moyes Man United crossing fiasco against Fulham, yeah?
Goodness me, yes.
Talk about Craven Cottage, more like Lofted Park.
Are you trying for the Loftus Road?
Oh, Lofted Road. Oh,
Loftus. Loftus. It's okay. It's only live.
Listen,
okay.
Here's another thing. Poor Altashesdi, as we know, ex-Arsenal goalkeeper, own goal today. This apparently, I was reading this on the BBC Sport website. Great website. I don't know if you've seen it. BBC Sport sent off in the first game of the Euros in 2012, injured early before the tournament 2016, and now an own goal in the first game of 2020. That's a sad.
He has this. Chesney's always had this. He's got a mistake in him. I know today wasn't really a mistake. It was kind of inadvertent, but probably shouldn't get beaten at his near post like that by Robert Mack. But if you look at some of the big games in his career, think of the North London derbies he played when he was at Arsenal. Makes mistakes. Always makes mistakes.
So harsh on Mack that's gone as an own goal.
Oh, it's a wonderful turn. Like the cut through the defence on the touchline. It's brilliant, but the skill. It's so unfair.
You can't even talk about that. And you know, in bars later, like, look at the goal I scored.
You wouldn't even get points for that if he was in your fantasy team.
Yeah,
which is just a scandal.
It's not fair.
It's not fair at all.
I'm getting major boos in the chat,
and rightly so. Keep the boos coming.
But here's a nice one though from Donna Kay. Skriniar has been linked to Man United and Irish coverage as well. How would you rate him versus Pau Torres? JJ.
I signed him on a save I did with Manchester United in Football Manager, and he was very good. So 10 out of 10.
Wow, that is lucky. Poland really needed to win this game. I mean, so did Slovakia. I'm just a bit surprised that they did. But I'm going to put it in a broader context now. We shouldn't forget also that Poland were quarterfinalists last time out in 2016. Yeah. Slovakia currently happily top of the group. I would expect very happily, and perhaps not expecting to be. This morning, top of the group. It becomes a little difficult now, doesn't it? Because as we saw from the Sweden-Spain game, Sweden are a tough opponent. You feel like with Poland's disjointedness, they might struggle to get results against either of those two teams. Are we looking at a Polish exit?
Plexit.
A plexit.
Plexit.
Are we looking at a plexit?
Potential plexit, maybe. I wonder because I wonder how that defeat changes the way Poland approach that Sweden game, because Sweden are, what's the best word? Stodgy would be an unkind
defensive
word. Defensive, obdurate, resilient, tough. The thing is, like, you add Lewandowski into that. It's the one thing the Spanish didn't have. I know that obviously Poland aren't anything like as gifted further back and in the midfield positions, but you put him in that penalty box and you provide him with even half chances, you'd probably back him to score. Mm-hmm. So it's a strange thing. I think it's easier for, and I don't have any real basis or kind of anecdotes to back this up. I think it's easier to play like Sweden did this evening when you're facing a team like Spain, where there is no expectation on you to be in any way adventurous. So you can be negative and you can have last time I checked the statistics, like I think the player who had the most touches on the Swedish side was like 35. The goalkeeper had 32, and that's fine because it's Spain, and if you get a 0-0, that's a great result. Poland, it's difficult. Different.
Okay. Sam Robbins in the chat saying, hope no plexit. I've got Poland in the sweepstake. So do I, Sam. So do I. Anyway, that's the end of that bit. We'll talk more about those teams as the games progress later in the week. But before we leave you this evening, we have our points rounding up to do. Our points rounding up. Alex will be back tomorrow, of course, so we can congratulate him for still being second to JJ, who did add some points today. You added some points.
I'm first, though, still.
You are first, yes. Still. However, you added almost as many points today as you had done in the previous 3 days.
That's bad.
You're now on 19 points.
Yeah.
So there's a thing.
Winning the real battle. Who's the people's champion?
Who's the people's champion? That will always be me, I think. Difficult. I mean, I know that you would like to see yourself as the people's champion, but I just don't think you quite have the profile for that. There's something dislikable about you, and that makes the people not like you. Whereas I'm a very likable person, and the people will always love me, even if I am in last place with 25 points. A good 4 behind you, Seb, in 21, and you are just 1 behind Alex in 20. Now, if anyone's listening who didn't listen to yesterday's podcast, I would say that the game is complicated. You don't really need to know how it works, but the more points you have, the worse it is. Points are bad. You don't want them.
Points are bad.
And there's no way of losing them once you've got them. A bit like weight gained after you've passed 30. So good luck to me with both of those things. And we will be back tomorrow, joined by Alex. JJ will be home for a couple of days. Wait, one day? When are you back?
Thursday.
You're in on Thursday. Yeah. So we'll see JJ again on Thursday. And Seb Stafford-Bloor, thank you to you.
Thank you, Joe Devine.
Thanks to Don and Craig, our tremendous crew for this evening. And bon night, au revoir, bienvenue, and bye.